From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, a psychologist joins us to debunk some common myths about suicide in honor of Suicide Prevention Month. Then, Milwaukee native Janine Rivers Colburn shares her experience with mental health struggles and how she helps others.
Many people look at suicide prevention as preventing someone from attempting suicide right then and there. Suicide prevention is so much more than that.
Travel host John McGivern talks about the end of Around the Corner and his new show, Main Streets. Plus, we speak with the musicians behind the updated polka, I Love My Green Bay Packers.
I've been with this song for 28 years. You know, in 28 years, Jason's going to be, who knows, he might resurrected back again, like long before I'm gone, you know, and the song will keep living on.
Lake Effect is next, but first the news. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us. We'll start with this. September is National Suicide Prevention Month. New data from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services show that 861 Wisconsinites died by suicide last year, and 1 in 10 American adults reported seriously considering suicide in June of 2020, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. One of the best ways to spread awareness about suicide prevention is to talk about suicide, suicidal ideations, and the common misconceptions surrounding it. To help me do that, I'm joined by psychologist and the co-chair of the Suicide Prevention Council at the Medical College of Wisconsin, Dr. David Cipriano. He begins by explaining when he believes is a good time to start talking to others about suicide prevention.
Well, you know, longitudinally, we can start talking to young people about this, I would say, by early adolescence, and possibly even younger. We have sadly had suicides amongst early preteens. So I don't think age is as much of a factor as simply knowing when somebody's showing us some warning signs, and then we need to jump in and start asking questions and having those conversations. But in general, we could start speaking more broadly, sort of, you know, prophylactically or proactively to groups as young as, I'd say, preteens, late preteens, just about how to look out for their friends, how to recognize warning signs, how to ask questions, how to tell their friends to go get help, how to not be the secret keeper, you know, and how to, for themselves, to go get help, tell an adult, don't worry alone.
Yeah, so you mentioned warning signs and risk factors, and we'll get to warning signs soon, but what are some of the common risk factors of suicide? I mean, it's very complex. Not everything will apply to the same person, but what are some general things to look out for?
Sure. So risk factors are a little bit different than warning signs. So risk factors are things that can be seen, such as isolation, depression, anxiety, substance abuse, acting out, sudden, you know, aggressive or impulsive behaviors. And they can also be acute events that have happened, perhaps in the context of some of those other issues. So acute events such as a lawsuit being filed against you, a divorce, even sometimes just trouble with the law, something even as small as a traffic stop or something like that. So those things can be risk factors that put people in a risk category. Now, warning signs are a little bit different because they're more acute, timely, in the moment, right? So we think of risk factors as these, a broader category that people have maybe been in this state or been, you know, dealing with this for a little while. But acutely speaking, in the moment, we would think of things as warning signs, like people talking about suicide. They do talk about it, and it should be taken seriously. people wrapping up business, for instance, saying goodbyes and that sort of thing. People starting to show interest in acquiring the means to carry out a suicide plan, or actually acquiring the means that might be stockpiling pills, acquiring a firearm. People acquiring means is a definite warning sign as well.
Can you explain the difference between having suicidal ideation and having a plan? Because you mentioned there's risk factors, things to look out for, but people experiencing suicidal ideation is a lot more common than we might think.
Absolutely. You know, people do get suicidal thoughts from time to time. Lots of us do. So we try to take a look at, well, what, you know, what's the meaning of that? And is it more of a passive wish to sort of be out of a negative situation, a bad situation? Is it kind of just become an escape hatch kind of thought of, if only I could just get out of this and not wake up or something tomorrow? So people have those thoughts. It doesn't mean they're going to act on them necessarily and so forth, but a plan is something very different. And not to say that just the suicidal ideation is anything to minimize or disregard. It certainly isn't. I'm just saying, from the individual who may be experiencing it, I think we want them to know, hey, you're not alone. Lots of people experience those. Tell me about yours in particular. I'd like to hear about what you've been thinking, you know. Now, when people do have a plan, have a timeline, have the means to enact that plan, then we become much, much more concerned. Of course, that increases the lethality of those thoughts.
Now, if it's okay with you, I'd like to go over some common misconceptions about suicide. First off, we'll start with suicide only affects people with a mental health condition.
Well, what I can say to that is it's actually not much of a myth. To be honest, Audrey, the great majority of individuals who die by suicide do have an underlying mental illness. And so that's important to know, right? Because when we're trying to contain contagion, we want to make sure that people know that it is not some romanticized event. We want to make sure people don't oversimplify the causes and the determinants of it. So we'll hear stories from people like, oh, his heart was broken and he just couldn't come back from that breakup. Or now he's, you know, with his loved one who died previously, or things like that. That tends to oversimplify what are almost always very complex and multi-determined reasons for why people take their own lives. And those have actually been found in the research to contribute to contagion or multiple suicides in the same space.
On the next myth, I have, once someone has suicidal ideations, they'll always remain suicidal. What is your response for that?
Oh, no. No, I would not say that. I would say that people can recover from suicide thoughts, suicidal behavior. They can absolutely get out of that thinking and can definitely move beyond and have a life that does not involve constant thoughts about suicide and so forth.
You touched upon this a little bit earlier, but one myth is that most suicides happen suddenly and without warning.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a myth. Because we do find, as we trace back, that there were warning signs. Now, certainly, there are some spontaneous cases we find, especially among adolescents and rather young adults. We do see a certain amount of those deaths by suicide to be rather spontaneous. It's true. But again, we look back, there still may be some warning signs present.
So it may just be that those people who were involved in a person's life may not recognize what's going on in the time. That's why it may seem like it's out of nowhere.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. The next one we have is that, and hopefully you can help explain some of the experiences people are feeling with ideations, is that people who die by suicide are seen as selfish or taking the easy road out. Can you explain how people who are struggling are actually feeling? To the best of your degree, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And they're feeling the exact opposite. They're feeling like a burden. They're feeling guilty for messing up everybody else's life around them. They feel badly that they have burdened others around them with their presence, with their problems, and so forth. So they're feeling the exact opposite of that. Absolutely. That's the perspective that sometimes comes from survivors, loved ones, who do often go through a period of feeling angry, and resentful that they were left behind.
And lastly, we have talking about suicide will lead to and encourage suicide.
Yeah, absolutely not. That's one of the biggest myths we work hard to dispel. You will not plant the seed of the thought by talking about it or by asking a pointed question for somebody that you're worried about. As a matter of fact, most people that have been having suicidal thoughts and even more that recover from an attempt will say one of the things that really helped me was that person who was asking those questions and who was trying to address it with me.
So if someone doesn't have a strong support system or someone asking those direct questions, what are some healthy coping skills to get them through a difficult period that suicidal ideations may be a part of?
Absolutely. One of the great strategies that we use is just weathering the storm, those couple of minutes where the thoughts are intense, the feelings of hopelessness and lack of a future are coming strong, and the impulse is strong as well. We just need people to weather that storm, whether it's 2 minutes, 3 minutes, or whatever. Sometimes that's all it takes, just that little pause. So if we can get somebody to have a list of activities they can do when these thoughts start coming on strong, and it might be something as simple as, call your grandmother, play your favorite video game, iron a shirt. people come up with lists of brief little things they can do to just get through those few difficult minutes, hit the pause button, and be able to just recalibrate and take a step back.
Dr. David Cipriano is a psychologist and the co-chair of the Suicide Prevention Council at the Medical College of Wisconsin. If you or someone you know is dealing with suicidal thoughts, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255. You'll also find a link to more resources at wuwm.com. Milwaukee native Janine Rivers Colburn is a suicide prevention consultant, author, and speaker. Her passion in advocating for mental health stems from her lived experience as a suicide attempt survivor. Rivers Colburn partners with Prevent Suicide Greater Milwaukee, Mental Health America Wisconsin, and the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention to educate others and share the importance of reaching out for help when you're struggling. To share her perspective on what suicide prevention means, she joins me now. Janine, welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you for giving me this amazing opportunity.
So you have the life experience of dealing with suicidal ideation. So today we're talking about Suicide Prevention Month in a way that's unique to you. We do want to take a moment to remind listeners that you're not a licensed psychologist, nor an expert, nor am I. We're just coming at this as speaking with you as someone with lived experience. So to start, what do you think is the most important thing to share with people who rightly so may get a little intimidated or nervous about this subject, but don't know where to start?
Well, what I have learned is that many people look at suicide prevention as preventing someone from attempting suicide right then and there. They think it means coming to their rescue in their momentary crisis. Suicide prevention is so much more than that. Suicide prevention is teaching people the things that they can do, self-care, changing your way of thinking, doing all of that to prevent you from having suicidal ideation, from thinking about wanting to end your life, taking you from the mindset of life is dark, that there's nowhere for you to go if you are feeling like, I just don't want to be here. So it is my goal this month, and what I'm doing is showing people what true suicide prevention, what it looks like.
So you touched upon some of the personal thoughts someone might be having if they're struggling with suicidal ideations. What about tips for someone on the outside who noticed that someone is struggling? And you notice like this goes beyond crisis mode. So say it's not an emergency. What do you think it's important for people to look out for in someone if they even have just an inclination of maybe they're struggling or, hey, they don't seem quite themselves?
Suicide is a very uncomfortable topic. People don't want to talk about it. And when they see someone that is struggling and they notice a change in them, a lot of times people are afraid to mention to them. But you have to have that real conversation and be willing to ask them. That is so important. Not to be afraid to ask. Ask them, are you okay? How can I help? Because some of the signs of someone who is thinking about taking their own life is they'll leave you subtle goodbye messages. Thank you for everything that you've done. If I don't see you again. And when you hear those messages and you see that person's smile turn to just gloom, you should not be afraid to ask them, you know, what's wrong? Is there something I can help you with? What's going on? Don't be afraid to ask. So we have to look for those signs. It's important.
So when we're engaging with someone and asking direct questions, how important is how people handle the response to those honest answers and actually following up and taking someone seriously?
I can speak from my own personal experience. When I've had someone, you know, their attitude and their comments to me clearly shows that they are just not thinking about being here. And I have had instances where people are insulted, they get angry at you and very defensive, and they may not even talk to you. It is important to always connect. Connect with that person. Connection is so important. What do I mean? If a person acts that way, give them just a tad bit of space. But how are you doing? Let's go to dinner. How about going to the movie? I understand how you're feeling right now. Just connecting, not trying to fix them. You know, don't try to fix them. That's very offensive because we're not that person. We're not in their shoes. So you have to, I think it's important to build relations, build community with the person, letting that person know that they're valuable. And there's so many little subtle things that you can do that.
So switching to coming at it from a person going through a crisis, when it comes to navigating a moment like this that may include suicidal ideations, what are some tools or coping strategies that you've found to be helpful?
For myself dealing with it?
Yeah, or in your work in speaking with others who have gone through similar experiences.
Teaching people to have a different mindset, to look at things differently, to empower themselves by letting them know what their opportunities are going. And also using my experience as a suicide attempt survivor, you know, sometimes I just really cry because at that moment in time when a person is feeling so dark, their darkness may have been darker than mine or lighter than mine, but still there was darkness. It is very important for me to share with them that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, that the light that they were given may be different than mine, but the light is there. Everyone has that light. I believe that people were born with that light, but sometimes they lose it. And you have to take the flashlight and walk in front of them and show them where that light is. So I use my own experiences. And the first thing I say is, if I can do it, you can too. And I show them how I went to group therapies. I learned them the true meaning of self-care. It's more than getting your nails done and getting your feet done. It's self-care of the mind and restructuring the way you think is so very, very important. Helping them find what their talent skills are, because a lot of people don't know. And teaching them to set a goal and then the steps that they can take to reach that goal. So that's mainly what I focus on.
We're touching upon a bit of the stigmas associated with suicide and suicidal ideations. And one other big area where there's a stigma outside of suicide, but overall mental health, is medication and the role it can play. What's your advice for helping people realize that medication is a helpful tool and not something to be ashamed of necessarily if it's something you do need?
I consider myself a life experience expert because I've been dealing with this since I was 21 and now I'm 57. So I'm going to tell you the story about me and medication. And it took me a long time not to be ashamed of it. When I was younger, when I was 21, I had a suicide attempt. And, I tried to take my own life and I survived. And I had to go on medication for that. And I dealt with being on medication for years and deciding. Now, first, I want to say that everyone is different. Some people can't do this. This is what I did for me. I decided I wanted to go off my medication. I told my psychiatrist, I need to feel what I'm going through. I need to know why I'm having this thing, anxiety, why I'm so depressed, and why I have suicidal ideation. So she took me off it gradually, and I went years without any medication. And boy, did I have to deal with me. It was not easy, but I did it. So why am I saying all this? The moral of the story is that a person should not be ashamed in any way, shape, or form to be on medication if it is going to help them be a better person. But what I can say from my own experience is I think it's important to allow yourself to feel and to know why you are experiencing the emotions that you are and why you're going on the medication. I want you to know that at the age of 56, I decided I needed to go back on medication. I had a lot of things going on with me, emotionally and mentally. My life changed. I had, I'm a woman of age that is going through menopause. So can you imagine all those emotions from that, all of the life emotions, me not sleeping and realizing I'm not doing too well emotionally and mentally. Staying in bed until 10 o'clock is not always a good thing when you're used to being up at 6 because you're depressed. So I went back to my doctor and I am very proud and unashamed to say that I'm back on medication and I am doing very good. So if you're out there and you're ashamed to go on medication, don't be ashamed to go on medication if it's going to make you feel better. Do what's best for your mental and physical health. So don't be ashamed if you have to be on medication. Be proud of it because you're setting an example for someone else when you're unashamed.
Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. Thank you.
So we're speaking during National Suicide Prevention Month, but this is an ongoing topic that needs to be thought of and addressed all the time. What are some ideas for action that you would recommend, no matter where people are at in life, whether they are struggling themselves or perhaps they just want to take steps to be a supporter of other people within their community?
One of the things that really hit me and slapped me in the face for Suicide Prevention Month is suicide prevention is everybody's business. Everybody's business. A lot of people don't realize that because it hasn't affected them. It hasn't affected someone close to them. They don't know anyone. Unknowingly, they don't know if someone has tried to take their own life. So they dismiss it like, suicide prevention. Okay. Suicide prevention is everyone's business, and people can get involved in ways that they never imagined. So one of the things is poetry. So if you are suffering from suicidal ideation, writing, you know, writing a journal is really important, but putting it in a poetic form is even, I have found, more enlightening. Learning what true self-care is amazing. Self-care, like I said before, is goes beyond the norm of what people think it is. I mean, what about your mind? You want to have self-care of your mind. You have to set boundaries is one of the biggest things. Boundaries to realize you're not Superman or Superwoman, that you have to keep your cup full. Because if your cup is only halfway full, you're giving from part of your cup that you can't give of people, and you become overwhelmed. So self-care is extremely important. And for me, sharing my story is suicide prevention. Sharing my story and showing people how to heal their family, heal your children, giving your mom, giving parents an idea of what they can do to heal their family. So it's those things that we don't think about that we can do for suicide prevention. And one of the really, really important things is reaching out to your legislatures in your area. You know, writing letters to them, knowing, letting them know that you care about funding that's going into suicide prevention, how important it is. Instead of having that long 1-800 number, what would life be back like if you could dial 998 on your phone, just like we dial 411. You know, these things are always trying to get passed. So that is how a person can get involved in having real conversations with people. That is suicide prevention. That is ongoing. 365 days a year.
Well, Janine, I want to thank you so much for your graciousness and sharing your story and your thoughts and showing listeners that it is okay to talk about suicide.
Yes, and thank you again for the opportunity.
Janine Rivers Colburn is a local author, suicide prevention consultant, and speaker. You can find more information on suicide prevention and links to resources and helplines at WUWM.com. Coming up in about 12 minutes, we'll learn about the famed polka, "I Love My Green Bay Packers," ahead of Sunday's game. But first, despite the cancellation of his show Around the Corner with John McGivern, the Milwaukee native is not done traveling. John McGivern will tell us about his new project, Main Streets, in just a moment, right here on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. When Around the Corner with John McGivern wasn't renewed by Milwaukee PBS, many people were surprised. During its 9 seasons, the show visited more than 100 communities throughout Wisconsin. Now, McGivern is turning his attention to a broader swath of the country with his new show, Main Streets. The show will focus on the Upper Midwest, Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and, of course, Wisconsin. McGivern, along with the producer and director of both Around the Corner and now Main Streets, Lois Maurer, joined Lake Effect's Joy Powers back in March.
Like a lot of people, I was really surprised to hear that Around the Corner with John McGivern was canceled. Did you see it as an opportunity to do something new, or did you find it disappointing?
Both. The fact that I was not renewed and that we had such popularity, not only in our market, but in markets all over the state and outside of our state as well. I was just surprised that the show wasn't supported like I thought it should have been. And the fact that it wasn't going to go on, it was time to come to terms with where I was in my career, where I was with what I wanted to do for the rest of, you know, of what I would call my career. And it came to, if Lois, who'd produced, created, directed Around the Corner, was going to stay at Milwaukee PBS, then I thought, well, I'll just continue doing stage work, corporate work, and my TV career is done. Until Lois and I got together and said, let's try something, let's continue. And hence, this came up, and we pitched it around and found a home. So is that about right, Lois?
It's definitely about right. But I just want to clarify, you know, the show didn't find support at Milwaukee PBS from the management, but it still had great support from viewers and sponsors and underwriters. So when the show wasn't renewed, we knew there was still life with John McGivern as a host of television, because he is so well loved. If you know John, there was no sitting around. There was not going to be a, okay, I'm going to wait for another year to see if this is going to, you know, come back. That just wasn't an option. And I have to tell you, we're very much alike. I wasn't going to sit around either, because we know the positive stories all over that are waiting to be told. But not wanting to, quote, redo what we did or feel like we were having a second pass, we decided to take a new direction. It's kind of the same direction, but with a whole new footprint over the Midwest, upper Midwest. And can I tell you, it's super exciting.
Yeah.
Right. So you have this new show, Main Streets. How does it differ from Around the Corner and build on the work that you did there?
You know, not only does it build geographically, but having done Around the Corner for 9 years, we also know what content it is that all of these communities offer. Yes, we're still going to cover all of the same great content that every community has, but it's going to be a slightly different tone. You know, there's some restrictions, to be flat out honest. There's restrictions on what we can do because we've done it before. So as I said to John, it's kind of like having kids. The firstborn is going to always be the one that comes to mind first until that secondborn finds their own personality. And that's what we're doing with this one. The secondborn is just as handsome and just as intelligent, but that secondborn's going to have to prove that it's just as good as the firstborn. Our goal is to separate these in the minds of our viewers, as well as in the minds of potential sponsors, because it's the next iteration, right? It's going past and beyond what we did.
Yeah. And the truth is that it's still going to be a travel show, and I still am going to be the host. So I think the feel of this is going to be very similar. You know, we're looking at how we're going to cover things like we did. You know, John Gerda was such an important piece to Around the Corner. John Gerda's not involved with Main Streets. My brother Michael, who did sports, is not involved with Main Streets. You know, the official who did the 30 seconds at the end, that's not part of our format. We're changing up the format. We're covering things in a different way. And it's really, you know, we were the creators of Around the Corner, and now Lois and I are the creators of this as well. So to get back into that seat and realize that we can do what we want. We can really go out there and create something that has a feeling of celebration, which is what we really thought we accomplished, celebrating community. We can still keep that, but to do it in a different format is very, very exciting. And to be given an opportunity like this, I mean, I'm telling you, I'm at an age where I can sit on the couch. I've done it for a year, okay? But I don't want to do that. And I wouldn't be doing another show if Lois and I weren't doing this again together. So we're thrilled.
So not the same team, but the same creator, certainly. So a similar kind of vibe. The focus, though, seems to be Main Streets. I actually grew up on a literally Main Street in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. What do you think is so important about the Main Street of a city or town?
I'll tell you where we came to that name. It's because we really have traveled around so much that every town, every neighborhood has a main street, even if it isn't called Main, right? We were in towns where we were like, oh, we're on Main Street. We turn around, no, I guess it's called Water here. I guess it's called Front Street here. but they all have that same sense of this is where the community comes to gather. And as we said, the heartbeat seems to be loudest in a community on its Main Street. So we are definitely going off Main Street. Don't get me wrong. We still want to talk to employers and major, you know, organizations. And, you know, if the largest employer in any town is generally not on Main Street, and we're still going to go find them. We want to know what's made uniquely in that area. But in every episode we ever did, and every one we will, you kind of start and end on Main Street. So we thought, why don't we nod directly to that? And every community will get its Main Street in the spotlight at the beginning and end, and now in the middle of every show.
You know, I live in downtown Milwaukee. I was raised 2.5 miles from here. And when I was a kid, my Main Street was Oakland Avenue. I was born on the east side. It was UWM neighborhood. My mom worked at UWM. Oakland Avenue between Linwood and Locust was where all the shops were. And I do a piece in my one-man show about my downtown, I called it. I was a newspaper delivery boy delivering the Milwaukee Journal back when there were two papers, and the afternoon paper that I delivered to all those businesses that were run by, you know, French, Italian, German, Polish, Irish, Jewish shopkeepers, who I say in my one-man show that it gave me a glimpse into a world outside my downtown. It gave me a world outside Milwaukee, and they introduced me to all of this culture that I had no idea. And it was one block, my Main Street. So that was kind of us sitting around talking about what's next. That kind of was the springboard for what we're going to do.
So the focus this time is, of course, the upper Midwest, but you will be coming back to Wisconsin. What can we expect to hear about Wisconsin cities?
I'll say this. We will never leave Wisconsin. Wisconsin, we are born and bred. You know, I grew up in Milwaukee. John grew up in Milwaukee. And having done around the corner all those years, Wisconsin is in our DNA. So we are definitely not leaving Wisconsin ever. We look forward to exploring the rest of the area. There's 6 states that are involved in this show. It's going to be Wisconsin first and foremost, of course, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan. And it's the upper Midwest. And one of the things that's exciting about it, Joy, is we're hoping to find out what the Midwest sensibility is. You know, we know what Wisconsin feels like, and we know that the Midwest is known as friendly. You know, we want to feel what that vibe is, if it's different in other states, or if there is a underlying thread that's going to carry us through the main streets of the upper Midwest.
And we decided that we would go 300 miles from my condo in Milwaukee, 300-mile radius. So, you know, we're doing Dubuque, Iowa. And it'll be interesting to see, because we found differences in community sizes. So if we were in Sheboygan Falls, it was different than Sheboygan, which was different than Watertown. You know, and size really kind of determined. So it'll be interesting. You know, I think one of the largest communities we're going to for our first season is Evanston, because I have friends and people in Evanston, and there's certainly stuff to do. So it'll be interesting to see what that feel will be like in a Chicago suburb compared to, you know, we're going to LeClaire, Iowa, to see what that feels like. So I think size really kind of determines sort of what it ends up feeling like for us.
Oh, sure. And Evanston is even going to be different than someplace like Naperville, also a suburb of Chicago.
That's not in our first season, just so you know. The other Illinois community is Galena, which is people, you know, you say Galena, everybody goes, oh, and I say then, oh, have you been there? No, but I've heard about it. So we thought we like to pick something that's familiar, that has some sort of reputation, even though people haven't been. And then we put our sort of experience into it. So when that 26 minutes, however many minutes of television we're going to be doing on commercial stations shows up, it's interesting to hear people's reaction. I've been there, I didn't know that. Or I've been there and the feeling was so much what you shared with us. So it's great.
Well, I think I speak for a lot of listeners when I say I'm excited to see the new series. And Lois, John, thank you both so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thanks, Joy.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Lois Maurer is the producer and director of Main Streets, the new travel show starring John McGivern. Both join Lake Effect's Joy Powers back in March. The show is being produced by Milwaukee-based Plum Media and will premiere in January of 2022. We'll take one more break and then learn how the fan favorite polka, I Love My Green Bay Packers, got an update.
The song is kind of like bread and butter. Everybody can attach to it and enjoys it, and that's why it doesn't get old. I think the lyrics we kept fresh, but the song itself has always been fresh.
That's next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The Green Bay Packers pulled off an impressive victory last weekend against the San Francisco 49ers, and fans are no doubt still riding that high into this weekend's game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Some may even be singing I Love My Green Bay Packers, a polka written and released by Eddie J. Lemberger back in 1993. Since then, it's become an unofficial fan-favorite theme song for the team. Now, the polka is bringing in new fans with an update that still celebrates the green and gold. Lemberger collaborated with musician Jason Fabus and his band West Coast Prost to create the new version of this classic song. They both joined me back in January, and Lemberger starts by explaining how the song first came together.
When I first wrote the song in 1993, that was the first title I had. And then I thought, you know, this would be more powerful if I used, instead of the Green Bay Packers, my Green Bay Packers, because of course, our Green Bay Packers are our team. You know, it's the greatest tradition in professional sports. And, you know, to have a professional team from a small city like Green Bay in a state like Wisconsin and have the great tradition that we have, it's something quite amazing. So, and we can all claim the Packers as our team. They're our team. And we love them. And I think Jason mentioned one time, it's a tradition. It's a movement, the Green Bay Packers and our Green Bay Packers. Yeah.
Jason, you're from Milwaukee. You're currently living in LA, but obviously still a Packer fan out there. What kind of role has this song played in your world? And why did you want to team up to give it a little revamp here?
I first heard the song in the 96-97 season, which was when I was probably 8 years old and was a diehard Packer fan. And the team was doing very well that year, and this song kind of was a theme song for the team. Everybody rallied behind it. It was played on all the radio stations in Milwaukee where I was growing up. And I still remember it to this day. And for years now, as I've been getting older, I've been thinking I would like to, you know, do it again. I'd like to get in touch with Ed, and it's time to bring it back. And this year just really seemed to be the right time.
So you reached out to Ed and initiated this project?
Yeah, I used a really high technology way of getting in touch with him called Facebook.
Yes.
Yeah, I reached out to Ed on Messenger and gave him the idea, and I'm really glad that he took the message and received it well.
Yeah, Ed, what were you thinking? Were you like toying with the idea of on and off, or was this like a good springboard for you to be like, yeah, I guess it's time to do this again?
Well, I had thought about re-releasing I Love My Green Bay Packers for years, and Jason is such a great musician, and his band is so good, and I think this whole project, I think the song is in better shape than it's ever been, and that's thanks to Jason and his band. Very happy with the way everything happened, and it happened organically, kind of the same way that the I Love My Green Bay Packers song became a hit back in 1996. You know, it was, I didn't even know all these radio and TV stations had the song, but things were happening to me synchronistically at the time.
Now, I think it's very important that we talk about how you cranked up the polka. You know, Jason, despite as a jazz musician being your main form of what you're doing musically nowadays, living in LA, it certainly shows that you haven't forgotten how to polka.
Yeah, the polka band has been with me everywhere I go. We had one in Minnesota when I went to college there. I think that band is still playing out there. And then as I moved out to Los Angeles, I wanted to start a band out here. And it's a big part of Milwaukee tradition. And just like being a Packer fan is a big part of Wisconsin tradition, so is polka music. So we do it out here, and we do it on the West Coast. And there's a lot of people out here who may have never heard it before, so... We're happy to bring it out here.
Your band is called West Coast Prost, and with a band like that, you'd assume your bandmates are maybe Midwesterners or and Packer fans, but did you have to convince any of them to don the green and gold and get into the project?
I did. When we were putting this together, we had to turn this whole project around in about 4 days, I think, Ed, right?
Yeah, and, something like that by the time we acted on it, yeah.
We got it done quickly, and I remember one day I was driving all around Los Angeles to each band member and dropping off Packers gear that I had. I had enough t-shirts and hats for everybody. We had to locate a cheesehead from another fan, so we got it done.
I also love how some of your band members are balancing playing their instruments and also a big old stein of beer and taking, you know, sips of beer in between their measures and breaks.
Yeah, that's pretty typical in a polka band. Sometimes you got to tell the guys it's their turn to play and they're still over there drinking beer. But, you know, we pulled it together for the video.
You know, it shows Wisconsin, too. So when you were both working on the revision of this song, what lyrics or components were easy to decide to keep in as essential? And what sections did you feel needed a little updating?
Well, I think the second verse has all the names, you know, dropped names of different celebrities to tell them that we love our group, that I love my Green Bay Packers, or we love our Green Bay Packers. And so we just updated all those. We went from Rush Limbaugh, tell that Rush Limbaugh tale, Hillary and Bill, and Oprah and Phil. We changed those to Kelly and Ryan and Meghan and Harry and Beyonce and Gaga, Miley C, things like that. We updated it. And then we went also with the Kardashians.
Yo, Eddie J, you know, we got Packers fans all over this great nation.
But Jason, that's why our country is Packer Country USA.
Tell Kelly and Ryan, Beyonce, L and D.
Tell them what?
I love my Green Bay Packers. Tell Meghan and Harry, tell Gaga, Miley C.
And Bezos too.
I love my Green Bay Packers. I'll bet them Kardashians are secret Packer fans.
They look so dumb.
They know.
I mean, Kim and I, we share the same DNA, you know. Her father was Armenian and my mother Armenian. So, and then my father was European. So I thought we got to, you know, get some Armenian blood into this thing. Even though I've got a Lemberger as a German last name, my father was German. So good old Kardashian Armenians.
Absolutely. So when you first wrote this original version in 1993, Eddie, how do you feel working on it again, reflecting on this song and going around touring with the Packers tailgate group and now reintroducing it in a new way to everyone and also, of course, virtually?
I think now I Love My Green Bay Packers is, you know, the premier sort of theme song, you know, unofficial theme song for the Green Bay Packers. And probably like I've been with this song for 28 years. You know, in 28 years, Jason's going to be, I'm not sure how old, but who knows? He might resurrect it back again, like long before I'm gone, you know, and the song will keep living on.
We are going to have to probably discuss doing a collaboration with Lil Wayne after he just released his Packers song as well. So,
okay, that would be great.
We'll wait for his call.
Yeah, we'll make him do some polka.
I told Lil Wayne on Twitter, and I'm sure that he never saw this, but I said, I like the new song, but it could use more tuba.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
All these things you're mentioning are quintessential sounds of the Midwest that we're all used to. What do you think it is about this song that keeps it in such a special place?
I would say the lyrics are super catchy. The melody is very sweet. I was telling Ed Lemberger that the song is kind of like bread and butter. Everybody can attach to it and enjoys it, and that's why it doesn't get old. I think the lyrics we kept fresh, but the song itself has always been fresh. And polka music in general is just, it's joyous music. It's happy music. You cannot help but feel happy when you listen to it, no matter where you come from or what culture you're from. So, you know, the accordion and the tuba are beloved instruments in our music.
And also in our Packer circles. So Jason and Eddie, I want to thank you both so much for joining me to talk about I Love My Green Bay Packers and Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Yeah. Thank you, Audrey.
Yes, we take our opposition and crunch them like they're crackers. That's why I love my Green Bay Packers. We got the best team. Go Pack!
Eddie J. Lemberger and Jason Fabus are the songwriters and musicians behind the updated re-release of I Love My Green Bay Packers. We spoke in January, and you can see the music video for the polka at WUWM.com. And that's Lake Effect for today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Joy Powers and Mallory Chang join me in producing Lake Effect each week with help from Chase Browning and Kobe Brown. Becky Mortensen is our executive producer. We also heard from Susan Benz from the WUWM news team this week. Jason Reavy is our studio engineer, Michelle Maternowski is our digital manager, and Valeria Navarro-Villegas is our digital editor. Trapper Shep wrote our theme music. Join us again on Monday at noon to learn about a number of education-related bills the State Assembly is working on, including anti-racism instruction and cursive writing requirements. If you've missed any of Lake Effect this week, you can find all of our conversations at WUWM.com. If you'd like to take the show on the go, you can download the Lake Effect podcast from Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to hear our favorite interviews from the week, look for Lake Effect Spotlight. Thanks so much for joining us today, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.